Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite podcast, letting you know that as we kick off season four, several of these episodes were recorded in New York City just prior to the COVID outbreak. At the end of this episode, stick around for a follow-up as to how our guest is making their way through today's current marketing environment and what they see as the next opportunity. And as always, don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com. This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them today at uconnex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite. Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the CMO Suite Season 4. It is your host, Sean Halter. As always, the CMO Suite is presented by Connectivity Holdings. I'm excited we're back in New York City. I am with my favorite co-host, Stacey Horton. Hello, Stacey.
Oh, thank you, Sean Halter.
Lisa is working the cameras for us today. Bill is behind the board, making sure that I sound at least as good as I possibly can. And I'm really excited for our guest today. It is Meyer Gupta. Meyer is the Chief Marketing Officer at Freshly, but he's also worked at some pretty cool brands that I am familiar with in the past. And so I'm really excited to talk to him a little bit more about that. But let's kick things off right now with Meyer. Meyer, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me over.
Of course. You know, it's funny. We do this show. We usually do maybe 15 or 16 episodes. Sometimes you have a guest who's really interesting. Sometimes you have to kind of pull different things out of them. Every once in a while, you sit down with somebody, and before you even start the show, I don't know, maybe somebody else has told you this before, but you start kind of talking to them as if like you went to college with them or high school or something, and you just automatically start talking about stuff. And then suddenly I'm like, wait, no, we shouldn't talk about that. Let's wait till we start the show. We just had like a 10-minute conversation about the most interesting things that I'm interested in. Hopefully we can re-hit on some of those so we didn't lose our mojo with it. But thanks for coming on. And I don't know, man, you give off this kind of pretty cool vibe right off the bat. Am I the first person to tell you that or am I crazy?
I don't know if you're the first one, but I would love my
wife. Is it a bromance that's already happened here and we just sat down?
I would love for my wife to hear it because she thinks I'm useless.
So you guys live, we were talking before, you live in the city. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in India. I went to school there. In fact, started working there. I moved to the US in 2002. So it's been a while.
What part of India did you grow up in?
New Delhi.
So New Delhi, do you go back often or have you been back often?
We go back, yeah. You know, they say you can get an Indian out of India. You can never get the India out of an Indian. So I'm still hardcore Indian at heart in my soul. We go back every year and my kids were born here, but they still have a lot of that cultural connection.
If you have never traveled overseas, there is no place like New Delhi. I mean, it is... I feel like New York is kind of insane, but it's a completely different kind of insane to somebody from America, perhaps not to you. And I think when you're from there, or when you start realizing kind of where the insaneness is coming from, there's a rhythm to the madness. It's not maybe as mad as it looks to those from outside. You look like you want to cut me off right there. You got something to say, Meyer. Go right ahead.
I was just going to say, my friend, that conversation is not going to take 30 days and we won't be done. But the one thing I will say is, hey, there was this guy who's an atheist, a NASA scientist, goes to India, never believes in God, comes back after 6 months, now is the biggest believer in God. People ask him, what the hell happened? He's like, man, I go to that country, there's so much happening. There are cows in the street, there are dogs. The country's booming. People are enjoying. That cannot happen without the hand of God.
Amen.
Amen. Wow, we almost had a joke and a religious moment, and I tingled from hearing that because I was reliving my moment out there. I've got a great friend, Michael Bot-Bull, who took me there for an Indian wedding one time, and you're right. You go there, it is transformative in some ways. I've been all over the place. I've been to some really amazing places and some beautiful parts of different countries. There is something about India and seeing New Delhi and then going and seeing something like the Taj Mahal, it takes your... Strangely enough, a piece of architecture, especially in a city like New York that's got amazing architecture, it literally takes your breath away. The people are incredible.
Yes, really incredible. I think it's one of the most beautiful places that have so many different levels and so much diversity that if anyone's never been there, I say you go there at least once in your lifetime.
You're missing something if you don't. So let's talk about the industry. That's why we're here. It's the CMO suite. We're here talking to chief marketing officers. And Meyer, I was asking you as we started the show if I pronounced it correctly, because every once in a while I mess those things up. And so I said, you know, what do your friends call you? And then, what did your parents call you? And you were letting me know that you actually don't, most people don't call you Meyer. You've got different people that call you different things.
Yes, especially at home. So I'm a proud father of two beautiful girls.
And how old are they?
6 and 10.
You got something ahead of you, buddy. I had a 16-year-old daughter. Good luck, my friend. Good
luck.
A lot of gray is going to come to that hair, my friend.
It is happening fast and furious.
And so what do your kids call you? What do your daughters call you? Dad?
They call I don't like that one. They call me Papi, Tata. My wife calls me John, which means a sweetheart, on the days she's happy.
Okay.
On the days she isn't, it's
she
all kinds of
else.
Other things that I shouldn't say here.
You were talking a bit about your mom. You said she passed a little while ago. What influence did your parents have in you growing up?
Everything. I think there are two things that have fundamentally shaped me on who I am, every single part of me. One is especially my mom, just having a lot of gratitude and humility and just appreciation for everything you have in life, struggles and victories. And the two is, I'm a Buddhist. I practice nurturing Buddhism, and I have a mentor. His name is Dasoku Ikeda. And everything I do at work, on the streets, at home, is basically trying to apply the life philosophy of Buddhism, cause and effect. And it's just you keep fighting every single day with a lot of gratitude for everything you have and everything you don't have, and you just never give up.
Well, in this space that seems especially hard these days, and maybe again, it's because I'm some old white guy who never found religion, unfortunately. Gosh, I certainly wish I had some days. But it's hard to remember that balance, and everything's changing so fast. And there's all of the millennial piece, and then there's the part of data, and there's the part of you did this right, and there's the part of you guys did this campaign all wrong, and you're scratching your head like, but you gave me sticks and you wanted me to build a spaceship with it. How am I supposed to do that? So in your space, especially, you know, you're an investor, you're a board member in a lot of different organizations. Right now you're working in one of the most competitive categories, which is, Freshly. And I want to make sure we spend some time with that. But my gosh, that must pull at your principles almost every day or cause you to have to reset. So how do you find that balance?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think.
I hope I didn't scare you.
That's a beautiful question because tease off. I have to do my job and at least share about Freshly. So you're spot on, Sean. Let me just spend half a minute about Freshly. We're the largest direct-to-consumer.
Spend as much time as you want.
We're the largest direct-to-consumer fully prepared meals business. It's a subscription model, a weekly subscription. And our core mission is to remove the barriers to healthy eating. And we strongly believe we've cracked open something that no one's been able to solve in the category, which is create a product that sits at the intersection of healthy, tasty, and convenient. And this is like the trifecta of good, fast, and cheap that's never been possible. And so a lot of times when we think about the category, people confuse us to meal kits. People confuse us to Uber Eats and the Grubhubs.
I'll say we were one of the first... people that we did, we kind of confused you. We actually saw one of your TV spots last night. It's the first time I've seen a TV spot for you guys.
Oh, that's great. It's starting to work.
Every once in a while, traditional still rears its ugly head.
We'll talk about that. I got a theory on that.
They did a nice job, I thought, in that spot of, again, you have 30 seconds to tell the story in a competitive landscape where we've used a few different ones. I'm not going to lie. And most of ours are not, they're, what would you call them, Lisa? Pre-prepared or... The kind where you kind of cook it yourself?
Yes.
So to your point, you guys have created a differentiation or at least some in the market.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. I think while, you know, there is a trifecta of healthy meals that have been harder to make tasty. And if they're healthy and tasty, they're not economical or not convenient. You know, they're not accessible enough in every single part of the country. What we've created is this magic that sits at that intersection. One is I don't think any one of us, for the most part, goes home thinking, I'm going to spend an hour cooked today. And convenience trumps everything else. And our mission has been to remove friction from giving you a healthy life. So one, that is a game changer. It's a whole new category. I think we are the category leader. But very thankfully, there's a lot more people jumping in, which in fact is a good thing. Competition is great from an end user and consumer standpoint. So there's a lot happening there. But I think you touched upon something else as well, is bringing that back to the function of marketing, the craft and the nuance of marketing. How do you survive in that, especially in a world where you've got revenue targets, you've got top line, you've got bottom line, but you also have a purpose and a mission and you want to be authentic. And I just spoke at the Ad Week earlier this week, and I have this theory, which I'll spend 2 minutes talking.
Please, take as much time as you want.
We'll love to talk more about that. I think, first of all, I'm the most misfit marketeer. I don't deserve to have that title because I grew up as a hardcore engineer. I coded for many years. I built products. Fortunately enough, I was asked to build product for marketing and advertising, okay. Marketing tech and ad tech. That is how I got my first foot into the world of marketing and advertising. And since then, and thankfully, and coincidentally, the world of marketing was evolving at the same time, where an engineer, a data person, a growth person could have a role here. So that's been my journey. But my thesis is we spent, let's assume 1970s to the 2000s, around 30 years and way before, the age of the madmen, where most marketing was unaccountable. You know, it was spray and pray, and for the most part, it worked. At least the most witty ad and the brands that had most money.
Most money won.
Yes. And a lot of people benefited from it. Come 2000, there was this era or the decade of digital disruption. All of us were kind of confused. Most brands kind of used digital as a bolt-on. We all created a center of excellence in a 50,000 people company, 10 people who were meant to change the world. We very quickly realized in those 8 to 10 years that it was not digital marketing, it was marketing in a digital world. The lives of people had inherently changed thanks to smartphones and everything else that happened. Then came the third phase.
You said marketing in a digital world, though. I don't want to move off of that too fast. I want to make sure we cover that third phase. But that's a critical point to remember. You know, anybody who's listening to the show probably has been through, to some extent, that, you know, 10 people have to change the culture of 50, and that it's not a digital team. It's the consumer has always led this, and we've had to play catch up.
And you're spot on, because while I'm saying that as a matter of fact, I also know there's a huge percentage of organizations that are still battling that transformation.
Sure.
And I don't have empathy simply because the consumer isn't giving them a chance. The consumer isn't waiting. Hey, I know you have a 150-year-old legacy to change. No, she is already ahead. She's already living that life. So one, there is no time. This is not a choice. This is a compulsion. You'll either change or you'll perish. The third phase is what happened in 2007, 2008, with the smartphones, with the Facebook and the exploration of social platforms. That fundamentally changed on top of the digital evolution, where now marketing had to become addressable. Marketing had to become accountable, and every ounce of marketing was asked to be measured. What the industry did, and what we all did, we over-indexed on from being totally opaque and a black box, mm-hmm. We became totally transparent, where now everyone is moving towards every single dollar of marketing being measured. What that's done is it's starting to take the soul out of marketing, out of the brand, because the focus is so much on AKA growth marketing or performance marketing. We've bifurcated the world of marketing into brand or growth, right? We are focused on same day gratification. Hey, if you saw my ad, you better click. If you don't click, here you go, $60 off, come back. What brands have to realize is that has a short runway. You don't have to stop doing that, but you have to do 3 things in parallel. Grow the brand, grow the user base, grow the user value. It's not either or anymore.
But let's pause on that for a second and let's peel that onion back, because, you know, this whole season is all going to be about performance-based marketing, because it's without us leading that conversation, every single person that we've already kind of had pre-conversations with about this season, that is part of the lexicon that's out there. It's to me the buzzword that's going to be part of the 2020 and 21 conversation. I think it'll be led in a couple of different ways. It'll be led by people like you that understand, look, it's an important part. You have to measure, you have to count. But if you're not careful, you're going to lose the soul of the brand. But then that's followed by 80% of the rest of the world that seems to be out there, where a CEO doesn't even know what it's called. He just knows you spent $20,000 and I got 6 leads from that $20,000, and let's fire that organization. Let's pick the next one who we're going to set up for the same level of failure. You know, we're in that space right now. We have this amazing brand that we're working with within several of our companies within our holding group. They want to be smart. They want to be forward thinking. They want to give us the tools to help them. We want to be able to provide performance-based marketing pieces back to them. But you also have to be able to say to them, look, this creative that we're putting in here, it wouldn't matter how great our strategy is. The creative is speaking to nobody. So we're buying these eyeballs, we're buying these dollars, we're thinking that people should be inspired enough to fill out a form when nobody wants to fill out a form. And we're using a piece of stock art that probably looks like it's not even Getty Images worthy. How do you wrap your head around that? Because that's the frustrating part.
Yes. It's a beautiful question.
That was a lot, wasn't it, Meyer?
There you go. It's a battle that I think we are all fighting in our respective worlds every day. And it's a worthwhile battle simply because winning a consumer today is not table stakes. You can no longer buy love. You have to earn it, and it's hard.
I've tried to buy love. It does not work.
It does not work. Right? I'm still failing at that.
There you go.
But to your question, how the hell do you crack it open? Because it's easier to sit here and talk and put decks and go on stage. I feel that one,
market, spend an hour on it, couldn't you?
Yes, totally.
Days.
Days, months. As a marketer, you cannot run away from taking accountability to measure the impact and incrementality of marketing. It's table stakes. If you cannot do that, if you're a marketer who does not hold yourself accountable for growth, measurable, tangible growth, then we are all going to fail, number one. Now, how do you do it? Let's just go to a click down and talk tactic for a moment.
Please.
Because theory doesn't help anyone.
This is free advice you're giving me, by the way, so that I can hopefully help retain this client, for crying out loud. It's the whole reason I'm doing the podcast, right? Is to be able to pick the brains of people like you and be able to go, oh, hey, I've got a really good something that I learned while I was in New York City. come down a level and talk to us about that if we can.
Yes. So a few tactics. One is every marketer, every CMO better have a P&L, better know all the numbers in the back of your head, in the front of your fingertips. It's rule 101. Two, at the end of the day, it all boils down to, if you have $100, how much of that $100 do you spend on direct response performance marketing that you can measure by the end of the day? It's like back in the day, you know, you had this much assets, you sold this much. Hey, tell your dad how much you sold and what's the cash in your pocket. Fair. And then what part of the $100 you're actually going to invest in the serendipitous, where you perhaps don't know what it's going to drive.
What was the word that you just used?
The serendipitous, or the serendipity of marketing, or the irrationality of marketing.
Serendipity. Okay.
This is where my Indian accent comes in.
No, it's okay. Luckily, I speak Meyer, so we're good.
There you go.
I cut through it.
So my theory is that if you take $80 or $75 or $85, based on what stage you're in of that $100, use that to get to you 100% of your business goal, which is your CAC, your top line growth, your user base, you know, your retention rates. Then the $15 you have remaining, you can spend however which way you want. In fact, spend it in a way that you don't have to. In fact, you can't measure it, because that balances the purpose with tangible growth. The challenge happens when you flip it. If you're spending 80 on the unaccountable marketing on only 20, then the CEO, the board, everybody has a right to come at you and say, what the heck's going on?
That's a good math analogy. And again, I don't know that I've heard it boiled down so easily to, you know, $75 or $85 needs to go towards, you know, as measurable as you can find. And that other 15%, it's not that you have money to play around with, but take some risks, take some chances. We have a client, this is the craziest story. They're a jewelry client. The CEO came to me and she said, I want to buy the bins in the airport, or we got that opportunity, whatever. I was like, Julie, that is the least of everything that we could buy. That is the least measurable piece of something. You want us to talk to people when they're leaving the city, not when they're coming. And she said, I don't care. And so I was like, okay. And so we bought them. And I will tell you, it is, of all the marketing we do, we spend millions and millions of dollars on measurable media, traditional media. Those damn airport bins, people still talk about them. People take pictures with them. Mm-hmm. Anytime we sit with somebody and they say something about their marketing, they go, well, you know, those airport bins. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then on top of that, not to get off topic, but then at some point she said, well, now I want the little dog bowls because now all these VIPs don't even use the bins anymore. So we went to them. They were like, we don't even sell that. We're like, well, you do now. Mm-hmm. So again, to some point that was a risk. It was an expensive risk, but it was a risk that still isn't measurable, but we know that it does impact to some extent because we are able to talk to consumers. I think my point with this is in ways that they were not expecting to see the brand. And maybe that's where this traditional TV piece took you guys. I'm not sure. You said you had an opinion on where traditional fits.
Yes. I think, first of all, I think marketing and marketing channels like fashion, so old fashion comes back. And I think we're all realizing that every channel has a role to play. The challenge happens when we measure them the same way. They all have a different role to play. Mm-hmm. So, and I also have a very strong belief that every channel can play different kinds of roles. So you don't bucket channels to phases of the journey, you bucket content. So I can use Facebook to drive reach. I can use Facebook to drive very direct response conversion. I can do the same on TV. I can use TV to drive education, awareness, and the brand love and understanding. I can also use it to drive actual direct response conversion. So I think sometimes we've started to bucket these channels into predefined roles and mindset, and that is how we are challenging ourselves, you know, putting ourselves in tough situations. The other part, going back to your point on the bins, et cetera, I think it also it's important to put in context the stage of the journey you are in as an organization. If you're a startup and you are in pre-product market fit stage, I think you should go all out in your acquisition funnel, performance marketing, very direct response, because that's the problem you're trying to solve. You're trying to figure out, how do I get my first 100,000 user base, tweak my product to prove product market fit? And that's when your funnel actually is inversed.
What works? That point is a good point. Your funnel is inversed.
Absolutely inverse. You're not spending money in awareness because you don't care about that just yet, right? What is your brand in your pre-product market fit? Your product is your brand. Your user base is your brand. Your data is your brand. But the challenge happens when you go through that. A lot of companies do that brilliantly. Now, there has to be an inflection point where now you've reached product market fit. Now you're talking about...
And you call it product market fit? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yes. It's like a pinnacle stage where you've proven that you've got a great product in the right market, addressable audience, retention rates is strong, there's word of mouth.
Product market fit.
Product market fit. It's a very standard terminology for growth companies.
And so standard that I needed to have it redefined to myself, but yes.
Yes. So once you've reached that bit of a pinnacle that has been proven... Mm-hmm. At that point, you have to shift gears again. Guess why? Because all the demand that was sitting on the table, you captured most of it.
Sure.
So you now need to crank a wheel that's going to create new demand. Now, you did not need it. You had early adopters. You had a brilliant new product in a category that didn't exist. But this is when you have to shift gears, where the funnel perhaps has to be tilted all over again. But you do have to realize that, well, now I do have to invest in awareness. One last point. Why is that hard? It is hard because... what are the hardest things to change in life are the ones that have driven success. So what drove success for you to get to product market fit is that very
lean, direct,
measurable, accountable. If that inflection point year is hard because now you're telling yourself, I have to invest in something I never needed before and is going to be needing new kind of muscle that I haven't proven yet.
And that's the key to some extent, right? It is some risk. It is realizing, to your point, that inflection point comes, and if you're not careful, you're going to talk yourself out of business because you're not going to be willing to take the risk, or you'll take a risk but it's too short and you'll say it's not working. No, you know, no brand is out there saying, gosh, I just wish I could invest more money in just building brand. You don't hear that anymore. You hear sales. And so again, maybe striking that, I know it, but I don't sit in the position of power all the time. Know that you need to build enough of a brand to at least get in the intender set, because if you're not in the intender set and you're in this ridiculously competitive space of not wanting to go to the grocery store to have to buy everything, but having it come in a box, if you never build the brand to some extent, how do you even get into the conversation point, you know?
Totally. And I think there are 2 points I would say, Sean. One is...
probably 2 points much smarter than mine.
No, just less smarter than yours. I think the definition of brand, in fact, the perception of brand is almost becoming a stigma now, unfortunately.
Sure.
And that is because when we all think about brand, many people think about brand as a visual identity. They think about your logo. They don't think brand is who you are. You know, brand is your soul. It is not a set of rituals or visual, you know, aesthetics, but something much deeper. And the other part on the risk element, I think this is where marketing over the last few years has taken up and has to keep learning a lot more from product and the product mindset, that there's no such thing as perfection in marketing anymore. It's only experimentation. So how do you really absorb those risks without putting the business at, you know, on the line? So how do you test and learn? How do you test investing in that top of funnel? How do you test a story and so on? So I think the DNA of traditional marketing has to now become extremely agile and nimble, where you no amount of qualitative and quantitative research can give you the perfect answer. It gives you direction. You go out there, you test and learn, you iterate rapidly, and then you know what works and resonates.
With performance-based marketing, do you find that there's been a channel as you guys started to grow, and now that maybe you've hit that tipping point, was there a channel that just seemed to really always work best for you guys, whether that was social or PPC or programmatic? What areas do you feel like, as you've been there over the last, you know, really just going over a year, that seems to have performed best for you guys without asking you to, you know, reveal any secret sauce?
Yes.
Did you see how I said secret sauce, Stacey? It's kind of fits the food theme.
It
no,
sure
not at
does.
All.
It is healthy secret sauce.
Thank you, sir.
Healthy and tasty. So look, like anybody else, we've had our key channels that have done really well for us. We grew tremendously last year. So we delivered close to 35 million meals, just to give you this sense of the scale. And these are all fully prepared, no preservatives, never frozen. So, which means that they're being cooked today, they are being delivered to your door latest by tomorrow. So that just shows you the urgency of the supply chain and the demand and supply. Two, we are now delivering in 48 states. So of course, we have a diversified acquisition funnel and a slew of channel portfolios. We obviously, like any other direct-to-consumer, we invest in paid social, we invest in paid search, in display, programmatic, X, Y, and Z. One thing that we have done since last year, which, like I was talking about the inflection years, is one, we've seen tremendous organic growth because as our brand and our you know, our size is increasing,
yep,
we have a tremendous influx of word of mouth and organic users, which is a great sign for product market fit. Two, we've also realized that we now have to now create new demand. And that's why we're investing in TV. And my question when you were talking about very nicely, and thanks for the plug-in on our TV spot, is it was done for our phase one of our journey, which is a little bit more direct response-ish. The next iteration of our, you know, of some of our content is going to be perhaps on some of the channels, a lot more inspirational, a lot more reflecting of who we are, our purpose and our mission. So we are in that second inning, so freshly trying to aim at 100 million meals a year, and that will require some of that shift.
As we start to wrap up, and again, thank you again for joining us on the show, Mayur Gupta, Chief Marketing Officer at Freshly. It's been an interesting opportunity again for us as we go into season four in trying to see how each of the brands and each of the people that we're talking to again, how they define performance-based marketing, where it plays a role in their funnel. It is interesting when somebody like you comes from the space that you did, that you maybe already have a thought process in mind of being able to figure out that sweet spot of, you know, what is your acquisition cost? What is your acquisition cost? There are a lot of brands that are out there that have never had to look at that. Mm-hmm. And so even just asking them that question of like, do you know what your acquisition cost is? We've sometimes found these executives just looking at us with kind of their eyes like, that's what we want you to tell us. And you're like, you've been around for 20 years and you want us to define that in 2 weeks? I mean, how are we supposed to do that? So what are, as we wrap this, what are a couple of steps that you feel like brands who maybe never had to look at that because they've either always used legacy or they've just never really known how to measure that? What are some early steps you feel like those could take if you give some of your advice to those people, including myself?
You know, one thing I will say is some of those brands, I'm assuming, are perhaps not as direct to consumer, so it is harder for them a little bit to measure some of those things if you're in more traditional CPG going via retail. Having said that, I think sometimes in a world that is influenced and driven by data, we get so focused on getting every single piece measured. I would say draw a line between being data dependent and being data inspired. Be data inspired. That's where you negate the false positives of data. It's okay if you can't measure every single aspect of your CAC, your customer acquisition cost. If you can't have multi-touch attribution, have proxies, have directional, but don't move so far away from who you are, what your brand is, and don't do things that you don't want other brands to do to yourself, very simply.
It's tricky. It's definitely what's out there. Those that can kind of do a better job of either perfecting it or in our spaces with the companies within our holding group, if we can just help educate and communicate that out there, that's where things like the podcast really seem to sometimes help our clients. It's one thing when we say it, they're looking at me, you know, or a member of my team. It's another with somebody when your level of experience is able to convey that. And that, again, was one of the reasons why we started the podcast. We didn't seem to feel like we had enough places to send them with that kind of content. Certainly, there's some great publishers and that kind of stuff out there. But it's an area where there's so much need for focus for people who aren't in New York.
No question. And if there's one last thing I would say, Sean, is there is so much focus on acquisition, performance-based marketing, even building brands, like I just said. There is one element that marketing and marketers don't perhaps often talk about, which is retention and lifetime value. It's always easy. It's harder, but it's always better to bring that existing consumer back one more time than going out there and fishing a brand new user.
Ridiculously amazing point, and we forget that so often. The lead is already warmed.
Yes.
Why are we losing them? So, wow, that was a lot. We covered a lot in a half an hour. Good stuff, good takeaways. Meyer Gupta, thank you very, very much for spending some time with us on the show.
Thanks, Sean. And I look forward to you trying the Freshly Box.
I'm doing it. Thanks. Take us out of the show. Listen, thank you all again for listening through this episode of the CMO Suite with Meyer Gupta. As I had indicated, we're spending a little bit of time with several of our guests, just talking to them really about how life has changed for all of us really in that last 5 or 6 weeks. At the same time, you know, much of what I felt like we were talking about within the episode itself was just specifically in regards to you and your philosophy on marketing is just to always be kind of thinking ahead, always be looking ahead, and always just trying to stay a little bit ahead of the curve. So with that, let's talk for just a few minutes itself about what that curve from your perspective looks like kind of moving forward from here.
The last time you and I connected, I think we spoke about how the craft of marketing has evolved from being purely unaccountable for many, many years to now being absolutely accountable, where it's lost its soul and purpose. And, you know, with all the challenges and the unfortunate aspect of this global crisis, I feel in many ways this has brought a much needed shakeup for the world of marketing and advertising and all brands and businesses at large as well. And specifically for marketing, it has taken all of us back to our roots, you know, how marketing ought to be, which is being authentic, being brave, being empathetic. Things that may sound very common for somebody who will listen and say, well, marketing always had to be. But trust me when I say that marketing in the last 10 to 15 years in a growth at all cost world where there was an influx of VC money, that we all moved far away from that and we created marketing, a FOMO-driven marketing that had to drive gratification on the very same moment. And it lost its core purpose.
Yeah, I think it's fair, again, to spend a little time just on that. And again, thanks for making a few extra minutes for us. But maybe that, again, is just one more of these takeaways, is that it's okay as a marketer, maybe even more now than ever, to be able to push back a little bit on growth at all costs. And for us as marketers, trying to make sure that the brands that we're with, you know, have that same alignment. And if they don't, then that's okay too. We continue to evolve as marketers and opportunity will come, you know, for all of us out of the marketplace. It may not look exactly the way that it did before. We may not make as much money as we did before, but in some ways, again, maybe this is also allowing many of us to kind of pause and realize money is just a piece of green paper that sits on a table. What's really most important is where you're at right now, home, with your family, with your kids, with those where you can make a lasting impression.
No question. I don't want to be sitting here, neither do you, I'm sure, to say, let's create something that will not generate revenue. Let's create something that doesn't grow, because we all know that a mission or a purpose without that business will not change the world, right? So it's not an either or, it's
Agreed.
An and. So when I say growth at all costs, what I've come to a realization is it's short-term growth at all costs. Because I firmly believe, and I know you as well, that being authentic and being empathetic, you know, being consumer-obsessed, is actually is a core principle of driving that growth. It may not drive short-term growth,
But this is the core foundation for driving mid to long-term growth. But I think the world we are living in is extremely short-term focused.
To your point, yes, revenue is important. Yes, I can't live on love. But in some cases, that authenticity allows you to form relationships, whether they're business-to-business relationships like this, or they're business-to-consumer relationships, that when the time comes and those decisions are being made, maybe it helps you win ties. And ultimately, that's all we can try to do in some ways these days, is to be able to be in somebody's intender set, hope that you formed some relationship with them through whatever content you're pushing out there, and that if and when they're ready to make some decisioning behind that, that you've been able to be, to at least come across as real and authentic, as opposed to just, let me just sell you something as quickly as I can and move on.
I can use, brands can use money to buy acquisition. You can get somebody to buy the first box or the first purchase. You cannot buy love. You cannot buy relationships. You cannot buy LTV. You have to work hard in a world where consumers have infinite choice, infinite access. You know, as brands, as marketers, you have to work hard to bring the user back one more time.
So money can't buy you love. That's where we're gonna end this follow up. It's a great quote. I think it's a song. I don't know. Meyer Gupta, listen, thank you again for making additional time for us. I'm glad that your family is safe and sound. And again, for all of you, if you have never followed Meyer online, you definitely should do so on LinkedIn. It's where I stalk him consistently. And again, thanks for making some time for us. We look forward to seeing where your journey takes you.
Thanks, Sean. And thanks. All the best.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.